The flowers I've laid outside my mother's tomb have wilted. I cast April showers, and they bloom again. It takes more magic than I can afford right now. Flowers and food take life, and I slump forward against the wall. When I'm tired lately, I can't keep my head up, and my left leg isn't quite right since the numpties. It goes numb. I stomp it into the stone floor, and some feeling shoots up my heel. If my mother came back through the veil, that means she hasn't completely moved on. She isn't here. She can't see me, but she isn't in the next place. Her soul is stuck in the in-between. How am I supposed to help? Find this Nicodemus? Is he the one who sent the vampires? I've always been told that the humdrum sent the vampires. Even Fiona thinks the humdrum sent the vampires. The humdrum sends everything else to Watford. My leg's so numb when I get to our tower. I have to lead with my right leg and drag my left behind me all the way up the stairs. Bunce is gone from our room. Snow's in bed, and the windows are open. He's showered. Snow uses the soap the school provides. He smells like a hospital when he's clean. I don't bother rinsing my face or changing. Just strip to my undershirt and pants and climb in my bed. I feel like death. Death not even warmed over. As soon as I'm settled, eyes closed, willing myself not to cry again, Snow clears his throat. Awake, then. I won't cry. I'll help you, he says, so softly only a vampire could hear him. Help me what? I'll help you find whatever killed your mother. Why? He rolls over to face my bed. I can just see him in the dark. He can't see me. He shrugs. Because they attacked Watford. I roll away. Because she was your mother, he says. And they killed her in front of you. And that's wrong. 41. Lucy.
The veil is closing, pulling us all back, but it can't get its grip on me. I don't think there's enough of me left. Imagine that, not having enough life in you to be properly dead. Not enough to break through, and not enough to drag back. I'd rather stay here. I'd rather keep speaking to you even if you can't hear. Even if I can't see you. There was a moment when I thought I could. There was a moment when I thought you heard. I stay, and I drift. I slip through floors that won't hold me. I blow through walls that don't stop me. The whole world is grey and full of shadows. I tell them my story.
Book 3. 42. Simon.
Baz is already mostly dressed when I wake up. He's standing at the windows. He's closed them, even though it's already too hot in here, and he's tying his tie in the reflection. He has long hair for a bloke. When he plays football, it falls in his eyes and on his cheeks, but he slicks it straight back after a shower, so he always looks like a gangster first thing in the morning, or a black-and-white movie vampire with that widow's peak of his. I wonder whether Baz gets away with being a vampire by looking so much like one. Like it would be too much to call him out for it, a little too on the nose. Baz has a long, thin nose, the kind that starts too high on someone's head and practically gets in the way of their eyebrows. Sometimes, when I'm looking at him, I want to reach out and yank it down half an inch. Not that that would work. His nose is also a little bent toward the bottom. I did that. I don't know where we stand this morning. I mean, I promised to help him find out what happened to his mum. Are we supposed to start that right now? Or is it the sort of promise that's going to come back to haunt me years from now, just when I've forgotten about it? And no matter what, we're still enemies, right? He still wants to kill me. He probably won't try to kill me until I've helped him with his mum. I guess that's a comforting thought. Baz gives the knot in his tie one last tug, then turns to me, putting on his jacket. You're not getting off. I sit up. What? You're not going to pretend that last night was a dream or that you didn't mean what you said. You're helping me avenge my mother's death. Nobody said anything about avenging. I throw back my blankets and stand up, shaking my hair out with both hands. It gets matted when I sleep. I said I'd help you figure out who murdered her. That's helping me, Snow. Because as soon as I know, I'm killing them. Well, I'm not helping with that part. You already are, Baz says, hitching his bag up over his shoulder. What? Starting now, he says, pointing at the floor. We're starting this now. It's our first priority. He heads for the door. I want to argue. What? Baz stops, huffs, then turns back to me. What about everything else? I ask. What everything else? He says. Class? We can still go to class. No, I growl. You know what everything else. I think of the last 7 years of my life, of every empty threat he's made, and every full one. You want me to work on this with you, but you also want to push me down the stairs. Fine. I promise not to push you down the stairs until we solve this. I'm serious, I say. I can't help you if you're setting me up all the time. He sneers. Do you think this is a setup? That I brought my mother back from the dead to fuck with you? No. Truce, he says. Truce? I'm fairly certain you know what truce means, Snow. No aggression until we're through this. No aggression? He rolls his eyes. No acts of aggression. I grab my wand off the table that sits between our beds and walk over to him, raising it with my left hand and holding out my right. Swear it, I say, with magic. He narrows his eyes at me. I see the tension in his chin. Fine, he says, swatting my wand away, but I'm not letting you anywhere near me with that. He slips his own wand out of the pocket inside his jacket and holds it between us. Then he takes my hand in his. He's cold, and I pull back, out of reflex. He tightens his grip. Truce, Baz says, looking in my eyes. Truce, I say, sounding much less certain. Until we know the truth, he adds. I nod. He then taps our joined hands. An Englishman's word is his bond. I feel Baz's magic sink into my hand. Someone else's magic never feels like your own, like someone else's spit never tastes like your own, though I guess I can only speak for Agatha's. Baz's magic burns, like heat rub. It hangs in the muscles of my hand. We've just taken an oath. I've never taken an oath before. Baz could still break it. He could still turn on me, but his hand would cramp up and he'd lose his voice for a few weeks. Maybe that's part of his plan. We're both staring at our joined hands. I can still feel his magic. We can talk about this after class, Baz says. Back here. He loosens his grip and I yank my hand back. Fine. I get to breakfast late, and Penelope hasn't set any kippers or toast aside for me. She says she doesn't feel like talking, and I don't feel like talking either, even though I have so much I need to tell her. Agatha still isn't sitting with us. I don't even see her this morning. I wonder if she's off somewhere with Baz. I should have added that to the truce. And also you have to leave my girlfriend alone. Ex-girlfriend, I guess. Anyway. Have you heard any more from your mum? I ask Penny. No, she says. Is Baz going to turn me in? No. Is the mage back? I haven't seen him. She eats half as much of her breakfast as usual, and I eat twice as much just to keep my mouth busy. I leave for class early because I feel like I've let Penny down. I can't take her side against the mage. For what it's worth, I could never take his side against her either. I get to class early, and Baz is already there. And he ignores me. He ignores me all morning. I see him in the hallway a few times, whispering with Dev and Neil. When it's time to meet back in our room, I tell Penny that I'm skipping tea to study and run across the courtyard to get back to Mama's house. I get as far as the stairs before I start wondering whether the meeting is a trap, which is just paranoid. Baz doesn't have to lure me to our room. I'm there every night. It's not like the time he tried to feed me to the Chimera. That time, he asked me to meet him in the Wavering Wood. He said he had information for me about my parents, and that it was too dangerous to risk saying it on school grounds. I knew he was lying. I told myself I was going to the wood just to see what he was up to and beat him into the ground. But part of me still thought that maybe he really did know something about my parents. I mean, someone must know who they are. And even if Baz was just going to use what he knew against me, it would still be something. It was fucking beautiful when the Chimera noticed Baz first, hiding in the trees, and went after him instead of me. I should have let the monster have a go at him. It would have served Baz right. Then there was the time when we were 6th years, and he left me a note in Agatha's handwriting telling me to wait for her under the yew tree after dark. It was freezing, and of course she didn't show up, and I was stuck outside all night until the drawbridge was lowered the next morning. My heat spell wouldn't work, and the snow devils kept throwing chestnuts at my head. I thought about smashing them, but they're a protected magical species. Global warming. I kept expecting something worse to show up. Why would Baz torture me with snow devils? They're just half-sentient snowballs with eyebrows and hands. They're not even dark. But nothing else came, which meant Baz's evil plan fell apart, or that his evil plan was to freeze me only half to death on the night before a big exam. Then last year, he told me Miss Possibelf wanted to see me, and when I got to her office, he trapped a polecat in there. Miss Possibelf was sure I must be responsible, even though she really likes me. I retaliated by putting the polecat in his wardrobe, which wasn't much of a retaliation because we share a room. I'm at my door now, still trying to decide whether this is a trap. And I decide it doesn't matter, because even if I knew for sure that it was a trap, I'd still go in. When I open the door, Baz is wheeling an old-fashioned chalkboard in front of our beds. Where did that come from? I ask. A classroom. Yeah, but how did it get up here? It flew. No, I say. Seriously. He rolls his eyes. I up and away'd it. It wasn't much work. Why? Because we're solving a mystery, Snow. I like to organize my thoughts. Is this how you normally plot my downfall? Yes, with multicolored pieces of chalk. Stop complaining. He opens up his book bag and takes out a few apples and things wrapped in wax paper. Eat, he says, throwing one at me. It's a bacon roll. He's also got a pot of tea. What's all this? I say. Tea, obviously. I know you can't function unless you're stuffing yourself. I unwrap the roll and decide to take a bite. Thanks. Don't thank me, he says. It sounds wrong. Not as wrong as you bringing me bacon butties. Fine. You're welcome. When's Bunce getting here? Why would she? Because you do everything together, don't you? When you said you'd help, I was counting on you bringing your smarter half. Penelope doesn't know anything about this, I say. She doesn't know about the visiting. No. Why not? I thought you told her everything. It just seemed like your business. It is my business, Baz says. Right, so I didn't tell her. Now where do we start? His face falls into a pout, I was counting on Bunce to tell us where to start. Let's start with what we know, I say. That's where Penelope always starts. Right. Baz actually seems nervous. He's tapping the chalk against his trouser leg, leaving white smudges. Nicodemus, he writes on the chalkboard, in neat, slanted script. That's what we don't know, I say, unless you've come up with something. He shakes his head. No, I've never heard of him. I did a cursory check in the library during lunch, but I'm not likely to find anything in a child's garden of verses. Most of the magical books have been removed from the Watford Library. The mage wants us to focus on normal books so that we stay close to the language. Before the mage's reforms, Watford was so protective of traditional spells that they'd teach those instead of newer spells that worked better. There were even initiatives to make Victorian books and culture more popular with the normals, just to breathe some new life into old spells. Language evolves, the mage says. So must we. Baz looks back at the chalkboard again. His hair is dry now and falling in loose locks over his cheeks. He tucks a piece behind his ear, then writes a date on the chalkboard. 12th August 2002. I start to ask what happened that day, then I realize. You were only 5, I say. Do you remember anything? He looks at me, then back at the board. Some. 43. Baz. Some. I don't remember how the day started, or any of the normal parts. I remember only a few things about that whole year. A trip to the zoo, the day my father shaved his moustache and I didn't recognize him. I remember going to the nursery in general, that we got digestives and milk every day. The rabbit mural on the ceiling, a little girl who bit me. I remember that there were trains, and I liked the green one. That there were babies, and sometimes if one was crying, the miss would let me stand over the cradle and say, "It's okay, little Puff, you'll be all right." Because that's what my mum would say to me when I cried. I don't think there were that many of us there, just the children of faculty. 2 rooms. I was still in with the babies. I don't specifically remember going there on the 12th of August, but I do remember when the vampires broke down the door. Vampires, we, are unusually strong when we're on the hunt. A heavy oak door carved with bunnies and badgers. That wouldn't be a barrier for a team of us. I can't tell you how many vampires came to the nursery that day. It seemed like dozens, but that can't be right because I was the only child who was bitten. I remember that one of them, a man, picked me up like I was a puppy by the back of my dungarees. The bib came up and choked me for a second. The way I remember it, my mother was right behind them. There almost immediately. I could hear her shouting spells before I saw her. I saw her blue fire before I saw her face. My mother could summon fire under her breath. She could burn for hours without tiring. She shot streams of fire over the children's heads. The air was alive with it. I remember people scrambling. I remember watching one of the vampires light up like a Roman candle. I remember the look on my mother's face when she saw me. A flash of agony before the man holding me sank his teeth into my neck. And then, pain. And then nothing. I must have passed out. When I woke up, I was in my mother's quarters, and Father and Fiona were casting healing spells over me. When I woke up, my mother was gone. 44. Simon. Baz lifts his hand to the board and writes vampires, and then on a mission from the humdrum, and then one fatality. I don't know how he can do this, talk about vampires without acknowledging that he is one, pretending that I don't already know, that he doesn't know I already know. Well, it's not just one fatality, I say. There were also the vampires, weren't there? Did your mother kill them all? How many? It's impossible to say. He folds his arms. There were no remains. He turns back to the chalkboard. There are no remains in that sort of death. Just ashes. So the humdrum sends vampires to Watford. The first breach in school history, he says. And the last, I add. Well, it's got a lot harder, hasn't it? Baz says. That's one thing we can give your mage. This school's as tight as a drum. He'd hide Watford behind the veil if he could. Have there been any vampire attacks since then? Baz shrugs. I don't think vampires normally attack magicians. My father says they're like bears. They. How? I ask. Well, they hunt where it's easiest for them, among the normals. And they don't attack magicians unless they're starving or rabid. It's too much fuss. What else did your father tell you about vampires? Baz's voice is ice. The subject rarely comes up. Well, I'm just saying. I square my shoulders and speak deliberately. It would help in this specific situation if we knew how vampires worked. His lip curls. Pretty sure they drink blood and turn into bats, Snow. I meant culturally, all right? Right. You're a fiend for culture. Do you want my help or not? He sighs and writes, vampires, food for thought, on the board. I shove the last bite of roll into my mouth. Can vampires really turn into bats? Why don't you ask one? Moving on. What else do we know? I get off the bed and wipe my hands on my trousers, then take a bound copy of the record off my desk. I looked up coverage of the attack. I open the book to the right place and hold it out to him. His mother's official portrait takes up half the page. There's also a photo of the nursery, burned and blackened, and the headline, Vampires in the Nursery. Natasha Grimpitch dies, defending Watford from dark creatures. Are any of our children safe? I've never seen this, Baz says, taking the book. He sits in my chair and starts reading the story aloud. The attack took place only days before the autumn term began. Imagine the carnage that would have occurred on a typical Watford day. Mistress Mary, the nursery manager, said that one of the beasts attacked Grimpitch from behind, clamping its fangs onto her neck after she neatly decapitated another who was threatening her very own son. She was like Fury herself, Mary said, like something out of a film. The monster bit her, and she choked out a tiger, tiger burning bright. Then they both went up in flames. Baz stops reading. He looks rattled. I didn't know that, he says, more to the book than to me. I didn't know she'd been bitten. What's tiger, tiger? I stop. I don't trust myself to say new spells out loud. It's an immolating spell, he says. It was popular with assassins and spurned lovers. So she killed herself. Intentionally. He closes his eyes and his head hangs forward over the book. I feel like I should do something to comfort him, but there's no way to be comforted by your worst enemy. Except, hell, I'm not his worst enemy, am I? Hell and horrors. I'm still standing next to him. I bump my hand against his shoulder, a sort of comforting bump, and reach for the book. I pick up, reading out loud where he left off. Her son, 5-year-old Tyrannus Basilton, was shaken but unharmed. His father, Malcolm Grimm, has taken the boy to the family home in Hampshire to recover. The coven is convened in an emergency meeting as of this writing to discuss the attack on Watford, the escalation of the dark creature problem, and the appointment of an interim headmaster. There have been calls to close the school until our struggles with the dark creatures are sorted, and even suggestions that we join the Americans and Scandinavians in mainstreaming our children into normal schools. There are more articles about that, I say, about what to do with Watford. I read a few months' worth, lots of meetings and debates and editorials, until the mage took over in February. Baz is staring past me at nothing. His hair is in his eyes, his arms are folded, and he's holding his own elbows. I try the comforting thing again, actually resting my hand on his shoulder this time. It's okay, I say. He laughs, a dry bark. That might be the one thing it isn't okay. No. I mean, it's okay that you're not okay. Whatever you're feeling is okay. He stands up, shaking off my hand. Is that what your friends tell you every time you blow up another chunk of school grounds? Because they're lying to you. It isn't okay, and it won't be. So far, it's only ever been a sign of more bad things to come. You won't be okay. Will you, Snow? I feel a wave of red shoot up my back and shoulders, and I clamp down on it, deliberately walking away from him. This isn't about me. I wouldn't think so, he snarls. But I've been wrong before. It's always about you around here. I drop the book on my desk and make for the door. I should have known this wouldn't work. He's such an unforgivable twat, even when he's being completely pathetic. I thought you were studying, Penelope says. She's got her laptop out on a dining table and papers spread around her. There's a pot of tea, but I'm sure it's gone cold. I lay my hand on the teapot and cast, "Some like it hot." I hear the tea bubbling, and a hairline crack shoots down from the lid. I was helping Baz with something, I say, but now I'm done, for good. She wrinkles her nose at the cracked teapot as I pour myself a cup. I can tell what she's thinking. Now that shouldn't happen. Then she jerks her head up and wrinkles her nose at me. You were helping Baz with something? Yeah, it was a mistake. I sit and gulp down some tea. It burns my tongue. Why were you helping Baz with something? Long story. I have nothing but time, Simon. That's when we hear the first scream. I stand up, knocking the table over and breaking the teapot more conclusively. Kids are running into the dining hall from the courtyard. They're all screaming. I catch a first year running past me, practically lifting her by the arm. What is it? Dragon, she cries. The humdrum sent a dragon. My sword is in my hand, and I'm already running for the door. I know Penny's right behind me. The courtyard outside is empty, but there are scorch marks on the fountain and a stripe of blackened earth. And I can feel the humdrum in the air, the empty sucking feeling, the dry itch of it. Most Watford students recognize that feeling by now. It's as good as a siren. I keep running through the first and second gates, and a wave of heat hits me in the archway, and I'm about to step onto the drawbridge, a wall of hot breath. I hold my arm in front of my face and feel Penny grab the back of my shirt. She reaches her ring, hand over my shoulder. You can't touch this! What's that? I shout at her. Barrier spell. It won't work unless the dragon knows the song. How would the dragon know that song? I'm doing my best, Simon. I can't even see it, I shout. Can you? I can't see it, but I can hear it, I think, flapping. A river of fire pours onto the lawn, and I look up. It's diving towards us. It looks like a red T-Rex with yellow cat eyes and big rubbery wings. Penny's still casting spells over my shoulder, trying to ground it. What'll we do with it on the ground? I ask. Not get bombed with fire. I tried to remember the last time I fought a dragon, but I was 11 then, and I'm pretty sure I just blew it up. Come closer, I think, at the monster, so I can blow you up. The dragon twists in the air without firing on us, and I think for a minute that one of Penny's spells is working. Then I see its target. A group of kids, maybe third years, crouching under the yew tree. Miss Possibelf is with them, and I see her casting spells at the dragon with her walking stick. I run towards the tree, pulling my wand out of my back pocket and shouting as loud as I can at the dragon, "Your attention, please!" I throw the weight of my magic into it. The dragon stops mid-zoom to look at me, hanging in the air for a moment like it's been paused. Then it rears its head back and thrusts forward in my direction.
Oh, blast!
Penelope says. She's a few feet away. She reaches out to the school, not the dragon, and yells, There's nothing to see here!
What are you doing? I scream, breaking right to lead the dragon away from the buildings.
Your attention spell worked on everyone, Penny says. They're all coming out to watch. There's nothing to see here,
she shouts again at the gates.
As you were.
I glance back and see kids standing on the drawbridge and running to the edge of the ramparts. The dragon is diving again, and I decide to run at it. A ribbon of fire shoots over my head. I drop to the ground at the last moment and roll away. Its teeth scrape at the ground beside me. It pulls up, snorting in what I think is frustration, then lunges towards me, snapping its jaws. I swing my sword at its neck, and the blade catches and sticks. The dragon heaves up again, and I go with it, holding on to my sword and using the momentum to swing onto the beast's head, my knees tucked behind its jaw. This is better. Now I can just throttle it. The dragon's trying to swing me loose, and I'm trying to get my sword out of its hide so that I can stab it again, when I hear Baz calling my name. I look up and see him running along the ramparts. He must have cast some spell on his voice to make it carry. I wonder if it's a hear ye, hear ye. I've never managed that. Simon, he's shouting, don't hurt it.
Don't hurt it? Sod that.
I go back to yanking on my blade.
Simon!
Baz cries out again.
Wait! They are not dark creatures!
He gets to the end of the ramparts, but instead of stopping, he leaps up on top of the wall, then out over the moat. Just takes a running jump off the building. And doesn't fall. He floats out over the moat and lands on the other side. It's the prettiest thing I've ever seen. The dragon must think so too, because it stops struggling with me and follows Baz with its head. Its wings are beating less furiously. It almost lolls in the air, dipping in Baz's direction and snuffling little puffs of fire. Baz runs towards us, then stands with his legs apart, his wand in the air.
Baz! I yell.
No! You're flammable!
So is everything,
he shouts back at me.
Baz!
But he's already pointing at the dragon and casting a spell.
Ladybird, ladybird, fly away home. Your house is on fire and your children are gone.
The first line is a common spell for pests and mice and things like that, but Baz keeps going. He's trying to cast the whole nursery rhyme, like he's Houdini himself.
Ladybird, ladybird, fly away home. Your house is on fire and your children shall burn. All except one, and her name is Nan, and she hid under the porridge pan.
There's nothing in our world more powerful than nursery rhymes. The poems that people learn as kids then get stuck in their brains forever. A powerful mage can turn back an army with Humpty Dumpty.
Ladybird, ladybird, fly away home. Your house is on fire, and your children shall burn.
The dragon isn't flying away home, but it's fascinated by Baz. It lands in front of him and cocks its head. One breath of fire now. That's all it would take to obliterate him.
Baz stands his ground. All but one, and that's Little John, and he lies under the Grindlestone.
I slide off the beast's neck, yanking my sword out with my body weight as I fall.
Ladybird, ladybird, fly away home. Your house is on fire, and your children shall burn.
I wonder why no one is helping him. Then I look around and see every student and teacher in the school standing at the windows or out on the ramparts, all still paying attention like I told them to. Even Penny has given in. Or maybe she's as gobsmacked as I am. Baz keeps going.
All except one, and her name is Eileen, and she hid under a soup tureen.
The dragon looks back over its shoulder, and I think maybe it's thinking about hoofing it, but then it stamps, frustrated, and spreads its wings wide. Baz lifts his voice louder. There's sweat on his forehead and along his hairline, and his hand is trembling. I want to help, but chances are I'd just spoil his spell. I think about taking a whack at the dragon while it's distracted, but Baz told me to stop. I move, slowly, until I'm standing behind him. The dragon shakes its head and starts to turn again. I'm starting to think it really wants to go, that it wants the spell to work.
Ladybird, ladybird, fly away home. Your house is on fire, and your children shall burn.
Baz's whole arm is shaking now. I put my hand on his shoulder to steady him, and then I do something I've never done before, something I probably wouldn't try with anyone I was scared of hurting. I push. I take some of the magic that's always trying to get out of me, and I just push it into Baz. His arm straightens like a rod, and his voice hitches louder.
Away home!
Mid-sentence. The dragon's wings shudder, and it lurches back. I push a little more magic. I worry that it's too much, but Baz doesn't fall or crumple. His shoulder is rock hard and steady under my palm.
Ladybird, ladybird, fly away home,
he booms. The dragon's wings are flapping frantically, and it's jerking itself back into the air, like a plane taking off backwards. I stop pushing and close my eyes, letting Baz draw on my magic as he needs it. I don't want to overdo it and set him off like a grenade in my hand. When I open my eyes again, the dragon is a red spot on the sky, and there's applause ringing out from the ramparts.
As you were,
Baz shouts, pointing his wand at the school. The crowds immediately start to scatter. Then Baz steps away from my hand and faces me. He's looking at me like I'm a complete freak, which we both already knew was true. His right brow is arched so high it looks like it's broken free of his eye. Why did you help me? I ask.
Truce,
Baz says, still alarmed. Then he shakes his head, just like the dragon did when it was trying to throw off his spell.
Anyway, I wasn't helping you.
He brings his hand up to rub the back of his neck. I was helping the dragon. You would have killed her.
It was attacking the school.
Not because she wanted to. Dragons don't attack unless they're being threatened. And dragons don't even live in this part of England. Penelope runs into me like a freight train. She grabs my hand and puts it on her shoulder.
Show me, she says. Turn on the juice.
I pull my hand back.
What?
She grabs it again.
I saw what just happened.
She puts my hand on her shoulder.
When did you learn to do that?
Stop, I say, and I try to say it meaningfully, looking around at everyone who can hear us. The lawn is full of kids, all inspecting the scorch marks and generally acting like people who almost just died but didn't. I was just giving him moral support.
Excellent work, gentlemen.
Miss Possibelf is standing beside us. I didn't even see her walk up.
I've seldom seen such a strong and nuanced nursery rhyme, Mr. Pitch, and never a situation that so desperately required it.
Baz bows humbly, perfectly. His hair falls forward.
Mr. Snow,
she goes on, turning to me,
perhaps you'll provide a report for the headmaster upon his return. And we'll work on moderation this week in elocution.
I dip my head. Yes, miss.
As you were,
she says without any magic. Penelope puts my hand on her shoulder again. I pull it away. When I turn back to the castle, I see Agatha, the only one still watching us from the ramparts. 45. Simon.
You got visited, and you didn't tell me.
Penelope is standing with her hands on her hips, and I'm pretty sure she'd be casting a world of hurt at me if Baz hadn't taken away her wand.
You told him?
She swings her hand at Baz.
But you didn't tell me?
It was his mum, I say.
Yeah,
she says.
But he wasn't even here.
I was going to tell you, Penny, but then he came back and everything got complicated. We're telling you now, Baz says.
We,
she says.
Since when are you two a we?
We are not a we, I half shout. Baz throws his hands up in the air and falls back on his bed. You people are impossible.
And since when, Penny says to me, are you a power outlet that other magicians can just plug into?
I don't know, I say. I've never tried it before.
Try it again now,
she says, flopping down on my bed next to me. Penny, no, I don't want to hurt you. She puts my hand on her shoulder.
Simon, imagine what we could do with your power and my spells. We could finish the humdrum off by dinner and then take on hunger and world peace.
Imagine what the mage will do when he realizes he has a nuclear power generator in his backyard. Baz croons from his bed. I swallow and look at the wall. Penny's hand drops. I have to admit that I'm not eager to tell the mage or anybody what I did today. It's bad enough that I can't control my power. I don't want it pulled completely out of my hands. Penny's hand covers mine on the bed.
Was it a special spell?
She asks softly.
No,
I say.
I just pushed. Show me.
Baz raises himself up on one elbow to watch. I lock eyes with Penny.
I trust you,
she says. That doesn't mean I won't hurt you. Penny shrugs.
Pain is temporary.
That doesn't mean I won't damage you. She shrugs again.
Come on, we have to figure out how this works.
We never have to, I say. You just always want to. She squeezes my hand.
Simon.
I can see she's made up her mind. She won't leave me alone until I do this. I tried to remember how it felt out on the lawn, like I was opening, unwinding, just a little, just barely letting go. I give the very smallest push.
Great snakes,
Penny says, snatching her hand away from me and jumping off the bed.
Fuck a nine-toed troll, Simon.
She's shaking her hand, and there are tears in her eyes.
Stevie Nicks and Gracie Slick, fuck!
I'm on my feet. Sorry. Penny, I'm sorry. Let me see. Baz drops back onto his bed, cackling. Penny holds out her arm. It looks red and mottled.
I'm so sorry,
I say, gently taking her wrist. Should we go to the nurse?
I don't think so, she says. I think it's passing.
Her arm is quivering. Baz gets off his bed to take a look.
Did it feel like I cast a spell on you?
I ask.
No,
they both say at once.
It was more like a shock,
Penelope says, then looks up at Baz.
What about for you?
He gets out his wand. I don't know, he says. I was focusing on the dragon.
Did it hurt?
She asks him.
Maybe you didn't see what you think you saw,
Baz says. Maybe Snow really was just giving me moral support.
Right, and maybe you're the most gifted mage in 5 generations.
Maybe I am, he says, tapping his ivory wand against her arm. Get well soon. How did that feel? I ask her.
Better,
she says reluctantly, pulling her arm away from us. She frowns at Baz.
Hot.
He grins, hitching up that eyebrow again.
I meant temperature-wise, she says. Your magic feels like a grease burn, Basil.
Baz waves his wand in a shrug and turns to the chalkboard. Runs in the family. Like I said, everyone's magic feels different. Penelope's magic feels thick and makes your mouth taste like sage. I quite like it.
So,
she says, following him to the chalkboard.
You got a visiting an actual visiting. Natasha Grimm Pitch was here.
Baz glances back over his shoulder.
You sound impressed, Bunce.
I am,
Penelope says.
Your mother was a hero. She developed a spell for nomiatic fever. And she was the youngest headmaster in Watford history.
Baz is looking at Penny like they've never met.
And, Penny goes on, she defended your father in 3 duels before he accepted her proposal.
That sounds barbaric, I say. It was traditional, Baz says.
It was brilliant, Penny says. I've read the minutes.
Where? Baz asks her.
We have them in our library at home, she says. My dad loves marriage rites. Any sort of family magic, actually. He and my mother are bound together in 5 dimensions.
That's lovely, Baz says, and I'm terrified because I think he means it.
I'm going to make time stop when I propose to Micah, she says.
The little American, with the thick glasses.
Not so little anymore.
Interesting. Baz rubs his chin. My mother hung the moon.
She was a legend, Penelope beams. I thought your parents hated the Pitches, I say.
They both look at me like I've just stuck my hand in the soup bowl.
That's politics, Penelope says. We're talking about magic.
Obviously, I say. What was I thinking?
Obviously, Baz says, you weren't.
What's happening right now? I say.
What were you even doing?
Penelope folds her arms and squints at the chalkboard.
We, she declares, are finding out who killed Natasha Grimm Pitch.
The legend, Baz says.
Penelope gives him a soft look, the kind she usually saves for me.
So she can rest in peace.
46. Baz.
Penelope Bunce is a fierce magician, I don't mind saying.
Well, I don't mind saying,
now that she's standing momentarily on my side of things.
No wonder Snow follows her around like a congenitally stupid dog on a very short leash.
I'm fairly certain that we don't know anything now that we didn't know before, but Bunce is so sharp and confident that every minute with her in the room feels like progress. Also, she's fixed our window, and now it doesn't creak. I can tell she still finds me both loathsome and distasteful, but Rome wasn't built on mutual admiration. She's got a fine mind for magical history. Her house must be teeming with forbidden books, and half her opinions would get her thrown in a dungeon if her name were Pitch instead of Bunce. There must be mundanity in her blood somewhere. Bunce is the least magical name in the realm, and you should see her father, Professor Bunce. He's a book full of footnotes brought to life. He's a jacket made of elbow patches. He taught a special unit on the humdrum last term, and I don't think I ever managed to follow him to the end of a sentence. Snow and Bunce send me down to get dinner, because I'm the one who has an inn with Cook Pritchard. She's a distant cousin. And when I come back, Bunce has a piece of green chalk, and she's adding notes to my notes in small, cramped handwriting on the blackboard. Nicodemus, check library, ask Mum. Any risk? Ask the mage? No. Google? Yes. Can't hurt, Simon. Even her notes are addressed to Snow. They're like Ant and Deck, the pair of them, joined at the hip. I wonder if Wellbelove will be joining us too.
Simon's right about the vampires, Bunce says without turning away from the chalkboard.
The dinner tray tilts in my hands. I stoop a bit to correct it.
What?
The vampires, she says, turning around and putting her hands on her hips. Her skirt is covered with chalk dust. Snow puts down a book and comes to take the jug of milk off the tray. He lifts it toward his mouth, and I kick his shin.
Anathema,
he says. I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm trying to protect you from your own disgusting manners. The room won't blame me this time, you oaf. There are glasses right there. He sets the milk down on the table between our beds, then takes the drinking glasses and the handkerchief full of sandwiches.
Cook Pritchard just gave you all this.
He unwraps a stack of brownies.
She likes me, I say. I thought she liked me, he says.
I saved her from a kitchen skink.
Yes, well, she likes me for who I am.
Vampires,
Penelope says. Are you even listening?
I sneer, out of habit.
Put a sandwich in it, Bunce.
How can we guess who sent the vampires or what the vampires even wanted,
she prattles on,
if we don't know anything about vampires?
Vampires want blood,
Snow says, through a maw full of roast beef.
But they can get that anywhere, she says. They can get it easily, in Soho, after midnight.
She picks up a sandwich and sits on Snow's bed, crossing her legs. I could see right up her skirt if I felt like it, and if I tipped my head a bit.
I can't think of a more difficult place for a vampire to get blood, she says, than Watford in the middle of the day.
She's got a point there.
So why even try it? She asks.
Well, the term hadn't started yet, I say, picking up an apple. So no one was on guard.
Yeah, but it's Watford.
She shakes her long hair.
Even back then, there was a wall of wards against dark creatures.
Well, it doesn't have to make sense, Snow says. The humdrum sent the vampires, just like that dragon today.
It didn't want to be here either.
I wasn't sure Snow realized that, or believed me when I told him. I thought he was going to murder that dragon hen in cold blood in front of the whole school. Not in cold blood, it was attacking us, but slaying a dragon is dark stuff, too dark even for my family. You don't slay a dragon unless you're trying to open a doorway to hell.
But if Headmistress Grimpitch was talking about the humdrum, Bunce says, why would she throw that on Baz's shoulders? Does she expect him to kill the humdrum? And what about this Nicodemus?
Snow frowns.
We should stop thinking of it as an isolated attack.
It's the only vampire attack in the history of the school, I argue.
Yeah, he says, but all sorts of other stuff was going on back then.
The mage said the dark creatures thought we were getting weak. They were making a serious move on our realm.
When did he say that?
Penny asks.
It's in the record, Snow says. The mage gave a speech to the coven, even before the Watford invasion.
He sticks what's left of his sandwich in his mouth and reaches around Penny for a book. His jacket and jumper are on the floor, and his white shirt tugs out of his trousers on one side. He finds the right page soon enough, holding it out to us. I stand above them, not prepared to actually sit on Snow's bed. It's the front page of the record. The mage's speech is printed in full, and there's a large chart with dates and bold-faced atrocities, all the attacks on magic kind over a 50-year period.
Our dominion in danger, the headline asks.
Wait a minute.
Bunce takes the book from him and hands him her sandwich to hold. He takes a bite.
There's nothing about the humdrum.
She flips ahead to the story about my mother's death, then scans it with her finger.
No humdrum here either.
She closes the book and taps the cover with her ring.
Fine-tooth comb, humdrum.
The book opens, and the pages start rifling forward. They pick up speed toward the end, then the book slams shut on her lap.
No mentions, Penny says.
That doesn't make sense, I say. The humdrum existed then. The first dead spot appeared in the late 90s, near Stonehenge. We've studied it in class.
I know, she says. My mother was pregnant with me when it happened. She and Dad visited the site.
Buns takes what's left of her sandwich back from Snow and takes a bite. She looks up at me, chewing suspiciously.
I wonder how they knew.
Who? I ask. What?
I wonder how they figured out that it was the humdrum behind everything,
Bunce says.
Behind the dark creature attacks and the dead spots. How would they know it was him before they knew how he felt? That's how we identify him now, that feeling.
Did you feel the humdrum? Snow asks, that day in the nursery. I was a bit distracted, I say.
What did they tell you?
Bunce asks. What did who tell me?
Your family, after your mother died.
They didn't tell me anything. What was there to say?
Did they tell you it was vampires?
They didn't have to tell me that. I was there.
Do you remember?
She asks.
Did you see the vampires?
Yes. I set the apple back on the tray. Snow clears his throat.
Byers, when did you first hear that it was the humdrum who sent the vampires?
They're imagining my father sitting me down in a leather club chair and saying, Basilton, there's something I need to tell you. He never said those words. Nobody tells anyone anything in my family. You just know. You learn to know. No one had to tell me that we talk about mother, but we don't talk about mother's death. No one had to tell me I was a vampire. I remembered being bitten. I grew up with the same horror stories everyone else did. Then I woke up one day craving blood, and no one had to tell me not to take it from another person. I learned it in school, I say. Same as you. They both look surprised.
What happened to the vampires?
Snow asks.
Not the one your mother killed. The others.
The mage drove most of them out of England, I say. I think it's the only time my family has cooperated with his raids.
Mum says the war started with the vampire raids,
Bunce says.
Which war? Snow asks. All of them, she says.
She leans over Snow's lap to reach the brownies. I take a sandwich and the apple and stand up. I need some air. I wait until I'm down in the catacombs to tuck in. I don't really like eating in front of people.
47. Simon.
Penny is back at the chalkboard, making notes. Talk to Dad at Xmas break. Okay to wait that long? Ask him to send notes?
Why all of them? I ask.
Hmm? Why all the wars? Why did they all start with the vampire raids?
The war with the dark things started there, she says. That should be obvious. I mean, mages and vampires have never got on. We need normals alive, and they need them dead. But invading Watford, that was an act of war. And it was the first real attack by the humdrum, too.
What about the war with the old families?
Well, the mages' reforms started then,
she says. I wish there were just one war, I say, and one enemy that I could get my head around.
Wow,
Penny says, finally turning away from the board.
What are you going to do with yourself now that you don't have Baz?
I still have Baz,
not as an enemy.
We're just having a truce, I say.
A magic-sharing truce?
Penny, I frown and lie back on my bed. I'm knackered. I feel her climbing up next to me.
Try again, she says,
taking my hand.
No. Why did you try with Baz?
I didn't, I say. I just wanted to help him, and I don't know how. So I put my hand on him and thought about helping him.
It was pretty extraordinary. Do you think everyone could tell?
No.
Maybe. I don't know. I couldn't tell, not for certain, and I was the closest. But I saw him stand straighter when you touched him, and then the spell started working. There's no way that Baz is powerful enough to chant back a dragon.
She squeezes my hand.
Try again,
I squeeze hers back.
No, I'll hurt you. You didn't hurt Baz.
Maybe I did. He'd never admit it.
Maybe it didn't hurt him,
she says,
because he's already dead.
Baz isn't dead.
Well, he's not alive.
I think he is, I say. He has magic. That's life.
Morgan's tooth. Imagine if you could do it again. If you could actually control your power, Simon.
Baz was the one controlling my power.
It was like you were focused for the first time. Directed. You were using him like a wand.
I close my eyes. I wasn't using him. 48. Baz. When I come back, Buns is gone. I can tell she's been sitting on my bed again. It smells like her. Like blood and chocolate and kitchen herbs. I'll snap at her about it tomorrow. Snow has showered. The room is humid from it. But our papers and dinner things are still scattered on the table and the floor. It's like having two slovenly roommates. The chalkboard is in order, though, completely filled with Bunce's tight-fisted handwriting and pushed against the wall. I take my jacket off and spell it clean, hanging it in my wardrobe. My tie's tucked in the pocket. I pull it out and loop it around the hanger. I ate my sandwich down in the basement, washing it down with a few rats. I need to go hunting in the wood again. The rats are getting few and far between in the catacombs, even though I try not to take the females. It's a pain to hunt in the wood. I have to do it during the day because the mage brings the drawbridge up at dusk, and I can't float like a butterfly over the moat every night like I did today. I don't have the magic. I look over my shoulder at Snow, a long, blanketed lump on his bed. He has the magic. He could do anything. I'm still humming with his magic, and it's been hours since he pulled his hand away. He's thrown spells at me before, but this was different. This was like being struck by benevolent lightning. I felt scorched clean. Bottomless. No. That's not right. Not bottomless. Centerless. Like I was bigger on the inside. Like I could cast any spell, back up any promise. At first it was like Snow was giving magic to me, sending it to me. But then the magic was just there. It was mine. In that moment, everything that was his. All right. I have to stop thinking about it like this. Like it was a gift. Snow would never have opened himself up to me if there hadn't been a dragon overhead. I wonder if I could take the magic from him if I tried, but the thought turns my stomach. I change in the bathroom and brush my teeth, and when I come out, I see that Snow is sitting up in his bed. Baz? What? I sit on my own bed, on top of the covers. Can you come here? No. I can come over there, then. I cross my legs and arms. You may not. Snow huffs, exasperated. Good, I think. Just come here, he says. Okay, I have to try something. Can you even hear how ridiculous you sound? He gets up. It's dark in our room, but the moon is out, and I can always see him better than he sees me. He's wearing grey flannel pyjama bottoms, school-issued, and his gold cross. His skin is as grey as mine in this light, and shining like a pearl. You can't sit on my bed, I say, as he sits on my bed. And neither can Bunce. My bed reeks of intensity and brownies. Here, he says, holding out his hand. What do you want from me, Snow? Nothing, he says. And he means it, the actual bastard. We have to try again. Why?
so that we know that it wasn't a fluke, he says. It was a fluke. You were fighting a dragon and I was helping you. It was a fluke squared. Merlin, Baz, don't you want to know? Whether I can tap into you like a generator? It wasn't like that, he says. I let you do it. Are you going to let me do it again? No. Then it doesn't matter if it was a fluke. Snow's still sitting on my bed. All right, he says. Maybe. Maybe what? Maybe I'd do it again, he says. If it were a situation like today, if there were lives at risk, and this might be a solution, an option, other than, you know, going off. What if I turned it against you? My magic? Yes, I say. What if I took your magic, cast it against you, and settled Baz versus Simon once and for all? Snow's mouth is hanging slightly open. His tongue shines black in the dark. Why are you such a villain? He sounds disgusted. Why have you already thought of that? I thought of it when I was still rhyming at the dragon, I say. Didn't you? No! This is why I'm going to beat you, I say. We're on a truce, Snow says. I can still think antagonistically. I'm thinking violent thoughts at you constantly. He grabs my hand. I want to pull it away, but I don't want to look scared. And also I don't want to pull it away. Bloody Snow. I'm thinking violent thoughts at him right now. I'm going to try now, he says. Fine. Should you be casting a spell? I don't know, I say. This is your experiment. Don't then, he says. Not right away. But tell me if it hurts. It didn't hurt before, I mutter. It didn't? No. What did it feel like? Stop talking about feelings, I say, shaking his hand. Hit me, or charge me, whatever it is you want to do. Snow licks his bottom lip and closes his eyes halfway. Is this how he looked this afternoon? Crowley. I feel his magic. At first, it's a buzz in my fingertips. Then a rush of static up my arm. I try not to squirm. Okay? He asks, his voice soft. Fine. What are you doing? I don't know, he murmurs. Opening, I guess? The static in my arm settles into a heavy thrum, like electrical sparks catching into flames. The discomfort goes away,